Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
Build that wall. Build that wall. Build that wall. Build that wall. Build that wall.
The U.S.-Mexico border is almost 2,000 miles long. Over 600 miles of wall are already built. U.S. Customs and Border Protection wants 450 new miles completed by the end of the year. Acting CBP Commissioner Mark Morgan was in El Paso last month touring a new stretch of wall that's replacing some steel fencing. It's made up of 30-foot-tall steel bollards and is expected to stretch some 35 miles. Angela Cocherga, news director of KTEP in El Paso, had a chance to speak with Morgan about the border wall and a wide range of other topics, including the shutdown of the border to non-essential traffic and the rapid deportation of migrant children detained in hotels on the border. They spoke just feet away from a section of the aforementioned wall. Their voices may sound muffled because they're both masked. The discussion begins with Morgan describing the new wall system being constructed in El Paso.
It's got these flat, what we call anti-climb plates that are on top that make it even harder to climb over. Stuff that's never existed before. You can see it's got integrated lighting. There's going to be technology that I don't want to talk too much about. But then what's very important, too, access roads. So when I say that, all of that goes together to form the wall system that's never like anything else that we've built before. And so I'll say right now, we've got over 300 miles of wall system been completed, and we're going to have 450 miles done by the end of this year. And you know what? There's a lot of naysayers that thought we weren't going to get anywhere close to that. So it's been an incredible achievement.
It's a little confusing. Wall system could be a very important upgrade that you're talking about here, but it's not like this was wide open no man's land. There was an existing barrier. So how much of new barrier has been
built? 300 miles of new barrier. 300 miles of new wall system has been built. That's my answer.
In replacing other wall.
300 miles of brand new wall system. That's my answer, and that's going to continue to be my answer because it's true.
Okay, so even if it's going in the place of something that was already here.
Look, here I'll give you another analogy, right? So if you have a 25-year-old car and you go the weekend and you buy a brand new, pick a car, Mercedes, right? And somebody asks you, what'd you do this weekend? I guarantee you no one says, I bought a replacement vehicle. They said, hey, I bought a brand new car. Why? Because it's brand new in every single way. And that's why I look at this brand new wall system.
We saw some high-level DHS employees, including our local Border Patrol Chief Chavez, also there at a public event, touting and praising that private wall. That was later used as a fundraising tool by the We Build the Wall people. What would you want to say about that? Because now some of those very people have faced indictment for fraud and for money laundering.
Yeah, so we had nothing to do with that. So it was a private endeavor that CBP had absolutely nothing to do with. Hey, if somebody wants to take on a private endeavor and help secure the border, we're not going to, weigh in on that. And if somebody does want to do something that helps secure the border, again, we're not going to go against that. But we had nothing to do with We Build the Wall whatsoever.
You know, I've covered this agency a long time. You can probably tell I'm a seasoned reporter. And so, you know, the DHS and the legacy agencies, and there was always an attempt by leadership to go out of their way to not to allow it to be politicized, to talk about operations, but not policy, even as Congress or presidents tried to draw them in. We've seen a real shift, and of course it's a signature promise of President Trump, but what would you say to critics who say this should not be politicized? This is a security agency, and it raises concerns for the American public that, you know, this might be used as a photo op during a re-election campaign.
Hey, look, you know, how a political party uses what we do, that's out of my control. What I can tell you, though, as the acting commissioner of CBP, I am here officially. I am here to me, it's not a celebratory issue. To me, it's actually about recognizing a tremendous achievement, right? So like the border wall, for example, this is a significant, it's a tremendous achievement. It's a tremendous achievement that we've given a tool to the Border Patrol agents to more effectively do their job to protect this country, while at the same time allowing them to do their job more effectively. So as the acting commissioner, I'm proud to be here. I'm proud to be here to recognize this achievement. Now, you know, how somebody uses that politically, that's out of our control. And I can tell you, it cuts both ways, because politics, there have been, politics used on one side to say it's great, and there's been political events to say how horrible it is. So both sides have politicized this.
I asked about the care of migrant children and Title 42 expulsions. That policy allows for the rapid removal of migrants, including children seeking asylum, as part of COVID-19 restrictions at the border.
And now we have children held in hotel rooms kind of secretly. People are finding out about this after the fact. What would you want to say? Why is it secret? And what about the care of those migrant children?
So I probably object strenuously to your premise that it's secretly, like there's some nefarious thing that's going, when it's actually completely the opposite. So let me address that a little bit. So because exactly what's happening, right? So when advocacy groups found out that hotel chains were actually allowing ICE to use the facilities, guess what happened? They went out and they protested, and they drove those hotels to then not work with ICE anymore. So there is a level of operational sensitivities that we want to do, but that doesn't mean anything's being done in secret. And I'll tell you, actually, by moving the children, so instead of the children being in congregate settings of Border Patrol, which are these open air environments, which is could be conducive to the further spread of COVID, is that we're actually then giving them to ICE, who actually is really a quasi isolation concept. Right. So they're not further exposed. They're not in these settings exposed to hundreds of other individuals. So it was actually for their protection that they did that going forward. And it's been very effective.
One of the things acting CBP Commissioner Mark Morgan wanted to highlight during his visit to El Paso was the border shutdown to all but essential travel. New measures are now in place to discourage U.S. citizens and legal permanent residents from going back and forth across the border unless there's an essential reason. You'll hear him refer to legal permanent residents as LPRs at POEs, which are ports of entry.
Now let's go to the travel restrictions, non-essential travelers. I think most people heard of the POEs. What we saw is when we instituted that and we said, hey, look, if you're traveling for essential reasons, you can come in. Non-essential, no, you can't come in. The irony here is the Mexican nationals, they heeded the medical advice. They stopped. And right after we instituted that, we saw a precipitous drop in cross-border traffic by 50%. But the irony here is, guess who kept coming? U.S. CITs and LPRs. So, of course, the travel restrictions did not apply to U.S. citizens. We're not going to bar a U.S. citizen from coming in. But what we saw is we did a survey. 83% of the individuals going back and forth to Mexico in the United States right now, as we're seeing a spike along the southwest border, 83% were U.S. CITs and LPRs. We did a survey of 106,000 U.S. CITs and LPRs over a five-day period, and we found of those 83%, 63% of U.S. citizens and LPRs were traveling for non-essential reasons, back and forth.
So how will you, because you're right, the enforcement was happening in Mexican nationals, but not actual U.S. citizens.
Correct.
Are legal. So what can you do
so,
about
so
that?
What we've now done is we've shifted a little bit, and we're really adjusting our resources to focus on the non-essential travelers, right? And so I'm less concerned about those that are traveling for non-essential reasons. Like, for example, in Laredo, we set up a essential and non-essential lane. And so you're U.S. citizen. Again, you can still come, but you're going to go to this non-essential lane, and maybe it's going to be one lane. And I'm not really worried about having that man 24 hours, right? We're going to reduce the hours. I'm going to take all the resources to help the essential travelers come in. So we're trying additional measures to help address that.
That's Acting Commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, Mark Morgan, speaking with Angela Cocherga, News Director of KTEP in El Paso. They spoke several feet away from a new section of border wall being constructed in El Paso. When we come back, a contested stretch of border wall is being built in the Rio Grande Valley.
This horrible symbol of hatred, which is the wall for Trump, is going to be just hovering over our cemeteries.
That's still to come on Fronteras. Stay with us. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Laredo has been a target of President Trump's push for border wall construction in South Texas for more than a year. This summer, U.S. Customs and Border Protection announced two contracts for wall construction in the area. A coalition of residents, landowners, and city leaders has been pushing back on the agency's efforts. Laredo Mayor Pete Sines published a letter in the Laredo Morning Times last month calling for the city to work with the Department of Homeland Security. He'd like Laredo to become a major DHS hub, regardless of whether President Trump is reelected in November. Texas Public Radio's border and business reporter Maria Mendez spoke to Sines about his letter, The Border Wall, and the upcoming elections.
When we've spoken before, you have said that the city's stance on the wall has always been no wall. But in your recent letter in the Laredo Morning Times, you acknowledge that it may very well be built. So how has your stance changed over time?
It really hasn't changed, Maria. The city's position has always been no physical wall. What I'm saying is allow the election as a referendum on the wall and on our posture toward the federal government. I perceive that the federal government may be treated as an enemy. The federal government is not an enemy. Yes, we have differences, the wall being a big difference. Some people want it, some people don't. So I'm saying let the election help us one way or the other determine that wall or no wall, Joe Biden or Donald Trump, you know, we should pursue a federal base, a hub for the federal agencies here, simply because the border will always need their presence.
Do you feel that Laredo is overlooked right now? We already do cooperate a lot with the federal government and Customs and Border Protections. So what do you think is missing and why should we strive to become a DHS base or hub?
What's missing is more open communication. It bothers me when I hear that we should confront them physically or facing off, that shouldn't happen. And obviously, can you imagine the message that sends to the federal government? You know, we're well poised to become a base for DHS or for any other federal agency. So we have so many others, and I would hate for them to perceive as we're closing doors. And I, as a mayor, want to keep those doors open. As a matter of fact, open them even wider. Because we don't know what the future will bring.
And as you've pointed out, some residents, for example, the No Border Wall Coalition, have been against not only the wall, but also have called for what seems to be a separation from what they call the militarization of the border. How would your idea for a DHS hub or base address the concerns of those citizens, especially, for example, some of their demands for money that's used for that sector to be reinvested in community programs?
Again, the election hopefully will be determinative of that. If people want to fight those issues, and of course we do want to fight those issues, we should vote for the person that will or will not allow for those issues. But going back to no one likes those. You know, I'm also, you know, I wouldn't want a strictly militarized border. The optics are not conducive for friendliness, but yet they're there. So we have this opportunity here, this election, to cast our vote.
I did want to ask about the border closures because I believe we're going on 6 months now. How has that changed your economic outlook for the city?
Oh, it's not very good, but we understand why too. But I do see the tremendous progress we've made here locally, And so, you know, we take it day by day, week by week, and see how things progress. In the event that they do open, I would like to see the federal government scrutinize medically whoever comes in, the non-essentials, you know, everyone really. And so we can be more preventative and cautious, but it remains to be seen.
That's Texas Public Radio's border and business reporter Maria Mendez speaking with Laredo Mayor Pete Zines. Earlier in the program, you heard Angela Cocherga speaking with Customs and Border Protection Acting Commissioner Mark Morgan. Maria Mendez also had a chance to speak with Morgan earlier this month. You can find that interview at tpr.org. The Trump administration is racing to make good on its key campaign promise to build more wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. The White House says it's building 10 miles of wall a week. Many of those projects on the Texas-Mexico border are controversial, including one next to a historic cemetery in the Rio Grande Valley. Texas Public Radio's Reynaldo Leaños Jr. reports.
Sylvia Ramirez is standing at the entrance of the historic Eli Jackson Cemetery. Some of her relatives are buried here. Inside the cemetery, there are bright flowers laying by headstones that date back to the late 1800s. No more than 20 feet away, heavy machinery is flattening out the land. Ramirez says the machines have cleared out brush and trees that have now left the ground bare.
It is heartbreaking just to know that this horrible symbol of hatred, which is the wall for Trump, is going to be just hovering over our cemeteries, disturbing the peace of our ancestors.
Ramirez says the construction taking place just feet away from here is for the border wall and an enforcement zone. She says it's very hard to watch.
Ultimately, we don't know what's going to happen with the cemeteries themselves. They keep saying that they are not going to build within the cemeteries. It's a language that's used within the law, the 2020 appropriations law. But we have to see it to believe it.
Last year, Ramirez says she was jumping with joy when she and her family heard that this historic cemetery would be protected from border wall construction. Congressman Henry Cuellar added language to an appropriations bill that said there would be no border wall construction within historic cemeteries and other cultural and historic sensitive areas in the region. Just down the street from the Eli Jackson Cemetery is the Jackson Ranch Church and Cemetery. Sylvia's brother Ramiro shows me some of the family's tombstones.
My father is here in the middle with my mother and my younger brother, but the two on the side will be myself and my wife, and will be Celia, and it'll be my other sister. So we already have our plots chosen, and we already know where we're going to be.
Ramiro and Sylvia say this land means so much to them, and that it should be preserved because it's home to some hidden history that many people don't know about. It involves their great-great-grandparents.
Nathaniel Jackson and Matilda Hicks, who was born into slavery, came from Alabama, as my brother said, in 1857. They were important and significant players in the Underground Railroad to the south, that is to Mexico. So for people who were escaping slavery and were attempting to go into Mexico, they would assist them via a ferry boat.
By the time Nathaniel Jackson and Matilda Hicks arrived here, Mexico had already outlawed slavery, so they'd help others get into Mexico. Ramiro says even though right now the construction of the wall isn't happening within the cemetery, he and his sister still have concerns about the wall's impacts.
And one of the reasons is flooding. The other reason is that we're going to be like a no man's land. We're not going to, the defense is going to cut us off to the rest of the United States.
Ramiro says they're also worried about the type of access they will have to the cemeteries and church. Sylvia says CBP hasn't given them much information about that.
It's beyond me why they would tackle this extremely sensitive area that includes not only these cemeteries and historical church, but also buildings that are essentially places that people live. There's lots of open field going at least east, but they're choosing, for whatever reason, to put the knife into the ribs right at this particular section, that I don't understand, and that angers me, and I can't get an answer for that.
It's a question Congressman Henry Cuellar has also asked the Department of Homeland Security.
And I said, look, I mean, you can go further up. You don't have to do it right there, but, you know, they're basically said, well, we're just following the law. We're just following the law. But, I mean, but the spirit of the law is that area. I mean, you don't want to have a fence 1 or 2 feet or 1 or 2 yards outside of the, within the, you know, within the, whatever the territory might be that we're talking about.
Both Sylvia and her brother Ramiro say this upcoming election means a lot to them. In the meantime, Ramiro is being represented by Earth Justice, who is considering filing an injunction. CBP said in a statement that an environmental monitor will be present every day during construction activities to ensure that construction best management practices are adhered to. The agency also said, quote, it has never been CBP's intent to disturb or relocate cemeteries that may lie within planned barrier alignment. I'm Reynaldo Leaños Jr. in FAR.
And an update to this story, a state district judge signed a temporary restraining order Wednesday, preventing the construction company from working in the vicinity of the cemetery until a hearing September 29th. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.